Welcome back to Pas de Deux, listeners. We are back in the studio after a little bit of a summer hiatus, and we're so excited to have Harper Waters on with us. This is actually a Skype interview because Harper is in Houston. So we'll tell you a little bit about Harper to get started. Harper Waters is a soloist with the Houston Ballet, one of the top five largest professional ballet companies in the U.S. In 2011, he won the prestigious Prix de Lausanne, and in 2015, he won the Princess Grace Award for Dance Achievement. He's worked with leading choreographers such as George Balanchine, Wayne McGregor, William Forsythe, and Tony Award winner Christopher Wheeldon. He's performed on international stages in Guatemala, Canada, Germany, France, Switzerland, and in numerous U.S. cities. He's accumulated over 143,000 followers on Instagram and created the web series The Pre-Show, which highlights the behind-the-scenes stage life of professional dancers and can be seen on his YouTube channel. Harper's videos have been featured on Huffington Post, Marie Claire, and Logo, and his social media presence has allowed him to work with photographers such as Mike Ruiz, Gerardo Vismanos, and Ryan Pfluger for The New Yorker. He's been featured in the pages of Fashion Magazine, Risk Magazine, Dance Magazine, and Point Magazine, and he has even graced the cover of Dance Spirit's February 2018 issue. You may have also seen Harper in his viral videos in heels on a treadmill as well. Not your typical classical ballet dancer, he's proud to stand out and hopes to continue collaborating with people, brands, and artists who are likewise unafraid. Harper will be featured in the forthcoming documentary Danseur, which explores why there are so few males in dance and sheds light on the difficult subjects of bullying and homophobia while illustrating the vitality of ballet. Such an interesting and multifaceted guest. Thank you so much for joining us, Harper.
I'm so excited to be here, and hearing that is just kind of like, wow, I've done a lot.
Yeah, it's great to have the reminder sometimes.
Oh, great.
I would also like to point out we are joined by Roxy, Harper's dog.
Mm-hmm. Of supreme importance.
She's a backup dancer.
Oh my gosh, has Roxy been in any of your videos? Did we miss it?
No, she hasn't been in any yet. I've had one person ask to put her on a treadmill, but I was like, that's too much, I think. But she does love the camera.
Good. Yes, we can tell.
I know, but I have yet to create an Instagram for her. I'm like, but we'll see. We'll see.
We got to get Roxy in heels.
I know, right? Puppy heels, but.
It'd be perfect. Oh my God, it's so cute. Okay, we'll try not to be distracted the entire interview. Anyway, we always start at the beginning so that everyone has background. Tell us how you got into dance, where you trained, and what styles you trained in.
Well, I started at like a local studio. I was put into dance because I was a constant mover. Mm. I was a bundle of energy, and both my parents used to actually be college professors. Currently, my mom is a volunteer at a children's museum, and my dad is a state senator. But wow. Having a real appreciation for the arts, I think, was the reason why I was put into dance. My parents kind of knew the benefits of that and understood that it would benefit me, really. And so I was put into those classes as kind of an outlet of energy. And more so what really happened is it really just stuck for me as a place that I connected with the people. I had fun doing it. I had kind of a natural ability of flexibility and rhythm. But more so, I really just connected with the people and the environment. And that was really what kept making me want to take more classes and drove me to do more with it. The dance studio has always been a place where I felt really comfortable and able to be myself. So that was like a competition dance studio. I think I took ballet probably once or twice a week, if anything, but like there was lyrical and jazz and contemporary, and I would do competitions on the weekend. But
was that really in Houston?
This was, I grew up in New Hampshire.
Oh, New Hampshire. Okay. East Coast. Okay, yeah. Cool.
I was born in Atlanta, Georgia, but I was adopted at 2 weeks and grew up in New Hampshire. Hmm. I went to private school in South Berwick, Maine. Maine was like, I live right on the border of New Hampshire and Maine. And dance was actually offered as an elective instead of sports at my school. And I didn't really have that many friends in high school as far as like, to go out with and kind of sleepovers and whatnot. So the friends I made in those dance classes were the reason I joined the competition dance studio. It wasn't until my school in Natick, Massachusetts, and that was when it kind of got on my radar that you could do more with dance, that it really wasn't a hobby, that you could really make it kind of a more of a profession.
Yeah. Interesting. And you said that you felt really at home in the environment. What do you think felt different about the dance studio or the people there than in the rest of your life?
You know, I think it was just more, I was able to like talk about things that made me happy. And it was the conversations that I was having with the girls in the studio that, I mean, you know what, you just know when you're in a supportive place, then you're just like vibing off of people and joking and laughing and you feel yourself. And I kind of felt a bit restricted when I wasn't around them. I felt like I kind of had to try and be someone that I wasn't, or talk about things or pretend to like things that were fine to talk about, but didn't really truly excite me. It just was, I wanted to be around that nonstop. And so the studio in that environment was just what I was connecting to at the time.
Interesting.
Yeah. So you said initially you were taking ballet once or twice a week,
yeah,
or two times a week, and now you are a ballet star. What was that progression like?
Well, you know, growing up in New Hampshire, I was really the only African American around in my grade, in my school, and especially in the dance studios. But being a dance lover, I saw companies like Alvin Ailey, and I saw companies like Lines and Complexions, but I didn't see people who looked like me really on a classical level, like in a professional ballet company. Alvin Ailey was really my inspiration to get into dance professionally. And I knew that you had to do a ballet audition to get in. And so that was the real motivation to kind of pursue ballet more, was so that I could get into a non-ballet company. Every one of my teachers just really kind of drove into my head the idea that you needed ballet as a staple to get into companies, and ballet is the fundamentals of everything. So more ballet classes and pursuing that was really just so I could get into certain companies that I had envisioned for myself.
Yeah. And have you done any work with Ailey, or do you think you might in the future, or have your dreams kind of shifted?
I did a summer program with them when I was young, but I have such a respect for that company and what they stand for,
yeah,
and kind of the message that they drive, especially now, just celebrating their history and the history of dancers who make up their company, and kind of what their mission is, and their tenacity, and their style of movement. It's just, it so comes from the heart. I really respect them. So I don't know if I could even do what they're doing, and I could be at that level, but I have such an appreciation for them, and I'm friends with a lot of them in the company, and I love seeing them. Revelations will still always be one of my favorite ballets I've ever seen. So yeah, I don't know if I would ever join them now, but it definitely was a goal at a few years ago. I say a few years ago, but probably like 10, 15 years ago. I'm old.
It all feels the same at a certain point. So tell us about this documentary you have coming up, Danseur, and your story that will be highlighted. And what do you hope the documentary will achieve?
So Danseur is a great documentary that highlights male dancers of all ages, at all levels. And ultimately, I hope it sheds light on just the struggles and the different paths that we endure in kind of our achievement of ballet and what we want to accomplish as dancers and as male dancers. My story is less to do with bullying as being different and trying to make a path for someone that is kind of more marginalized than others by the way that I look. But you hear stories of true bullying where they are made fun of, where they are tormented for pursuing a career in dance. You hear about boys who maybe are not necessarily bullied at dance, but they aren't accepted by their family for their career choice. So what you're getting is so many different stories. That's really why I'm so proud to be a part of the documentary, and I'm proud of its mission because, you know, I say this a lot, is that Misty Copeland, she represents African-American dancers, but not all African-American dancers are Misty Copeland.
Mm-hmm.
So we all have our own individual stories, and I think there are definitely popular male dancers, but not all male dancers are the same. And so I think that that's why it's so great that this documentary highlights just a few of us, just a handful of us. And I hope it starts a conversation that needs to be started, and that more exploration and more knowledge of men in dance, maybe not even classical ballet, can start to happen.
Absolutely. And I'm thinking immediately that the value add for this film is that it's not a mainstream conversation that,
yeah,
oh, what about the boys and men who are entering dance and how do they feel being bullied? And I would be really interested to see what conversation comes of the film.
Definitely.
Yeah, and I hope it contributes to liberating more boys to join dance or more families to think of putting their boys in dance, because it's, you know, it's such a wonderful activity for everyone, and there really are far fewer male dancers in the world than female.
Yes.
How can people see the documentary?
So right now it's still in its kind of traveling state, I say, where it is being shown at film festivals, and it's having private screenings. Actually was shown in Houston Ballet first, which I'm very proud of, and it will make its rounds to New Zealand and Australia and London later this month, and in September I'm actually traveling to Guatemala with the movie for a film festival down there. It was shown in Nantucket, and then after it makes its rounds there, it will begin to reach the distribution phase where it's, how do they want to share it more accessibly? So I'm hoping that it's shown in maybe museums or theaters, but right now it's kind of in its early stages of being shown.
Great. Well, we'll definitely share on social with all of our listeners once it is.
Mm-hmm. So you have cultivated quite the following on Instagram and social media. I see that you have some viral videos where you're wearing the ever-present pink heels.
Yeah.
And also you have your own YouTube series, which you've been doing now for 8 seasons. Tell us more about the viral videos and the YouTube series.
Well, my YouTube channel was started off of an obsession with YouTube. I loved I loved the beauty tutorials. I loved the funny characters that I saw. And it really has been just developing this other side of Harper and what I like to do. You know, it's never felt like a business or a task. It's always been super interesting to me to learn how to edit videos and to create content that is funny. And what it has developed into is really kind of opening a little window into what it is to be a classical ballet dancer, but through the eyes of people who I don't think are necessarily associated with being classical ballet dancers, kind of the unconventional ones, maybe the ones who, yeah, just aren't the kind of stereotypical bun heads or people you would necessarily think of when you think of ballet. And I just, with the heels were a gift from a friend, and one day in the gym, and we hopped on a treadmill and edited the video, posted it, and it's really turned into kind of a movement that I never really imagined, but I'm so proud of what it represents and kind of what it's turned into.
And what do you believe that it represents, and how do your followers connect with it?
You know, besides being, I think it represents humor, and it represents kind of this like fabulousness and this ferocity to it. I really think that it's just turned, or I've hoped that it's empowered people to show the power of when you accept yourself fully, there is such power in being yourself. I've embraced all aspects of my personality and what makes me happy and still been able to accomplish my professional dreams. I think people at face value see a big hunk of plastic pink heel. I think it represents a lot more of what I feel when I put them on and what I'm doing and the confidence it takes to wear them and learning how to apply that to my dancing. When I found a parallel between my social media persona and what I share there and applied that to my dancing, that is when I feel like my career really started to skyrocket. And when I was able to be myself in the studio fully, that's when more opportunities came, and that's when my career really started to take off, I feel like.
Wow, that's inspiring. Finding a confidence in truly being present and yourself and what that can do for your career. That's really inspiring.
Yeah. I mean, recently there was an Instagram post of these young ballet students, male ballet students, and they were doing all these tricks, all these like 540s and triple tours and all these crazy kind of hyper-masculine dance moves. Mm-hmm. And in the comment section, someone had written, "Thank you. This is what ballet is. This is what ballet is supposed to be, not what that idiot from Houston Ballet shares in the tutus and heels." And there was some more comment responding to that. But what I took from it, and what I kind of wrote like an open letter on my social media about it, was that your first few years, like professionals will tell you, your first years in the company, you will never, ever have the opportunity to do one of those moves.
Yeah.
And, you know, and in the time that you wait to do that, you have to find ways to stand out. You have to find ways to make your dancing special so you can get out of the core and get out of the ensemble work so you have the ability to do that. And I did that. Harper did that through self-acceptance. You know, when I got the confidence to be myself and to use my sass and to play with the music and to take risks and to be vulnerable, that's when my dancing became better. Mm-hmm. And what I said in my little open letter was that, you know, those men and the boys in that video, they're going to have to make choices as a dancer artistically that are completely unrelated to those moves.
Yeah.
And the only way that they are going to be comfortable to do that is if they're in an environment where they feel supported and it's compassionate and it's not built off of rigid stereotypes. So I, with my social media and what I feel like the energy that I create with the heel videos and with everything that I share is to help create that environment for more people to feel comfortable to take those risks, to be more vulnerable. And so it's that was never my mission. That was never when I put on the heels and danced to Fergie on a treadmill, you know, I didn't have that in the back of my head. Mm-hmm. But seeing people's response to it, it's something that I've become very passionate about. So that's when it's like, I'm like, I can't believe that little thing of plastic of pink heel represents all that to me.
Yeah. I was struck by it too when I first saw your videos, that ballet has always kind of held on to a stodgy image, and some people feel a great distance from ballet, especially non-dancers. And mm-hmm. I feel like you're really humanizing what it's like to be a ballet dancer. And that felt very apparent to me the first time that I saw your videos.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's crazy to me that professional athletes like basketball players get millions of more dollars than what we get.
It's insane.
You know, and we're selling tickets for our price as dancers to the theater, but then movie, it's like those actors are paid. It's like we're getting pennies in comparison. So I want to popularize ballet and make it as just as mainstream, a commonality and a way to connect with everybody is sharing yourself to find ways to connect with people. How do I relate to you? Do we have this in common? So a lot of what I do is that's the goal as well, to kind of get ballet up to where I feel like it deserves to be.
Yes, awesome. We talk a lot about that, and that's a huge goal that we share. And we'd like to talk more about that a little bit later on, too. I just wanted to react quickly to what you told us about that Instagram post. Mm-hmm. I think it's so interesting because this person saw people doing a bunch of moves and felt like that was what represented ballet.
Because the bag of tricks.
Exactly. And I feel on that level, too, we talk to a lot of guests who feel like ballet can be getting away from really the artistry sometimes because people get so focused on the technique and the tricks. And while both ultimately should be present in like prima ballerina or what have you, it's actually more difficult and much more important in terms of what ballet truly is to cultivate the ability to transmit an emotion or to, you know, move people in some way and to present some sort of feeling and some sort of personality. So whether you're doing ballet moves or not, what you're bringing to the table is just as valuable and probably more valuable in terms of dance because it's not just tricks.
In fact, I define artistry as how one brings themselves to the role and to what they're doing. So I really identify with what you say about bringing your confidence in yourself.
I mean, you have to make it authentic, you know? And we did Don Q earlier, or last season, and I had to do Espada. And, you know, I was, like, being coached to have to, like, really be this machismo character that wasn't me. And it was really a process to find how do I connect with someone who I'm passionate about and use that in my way to convey that I am this kind of hyper-masculine character that lent itself to the role, but also why does it have to be this kind of perceived masculine character? Can't it be also this? And that's what's so fun about taking on characters and mixing the blend of complete physical technique and then this artistry that we also have to have. And it's really fun. But yeah, those comments, I get them all the time. And I always say, you can call me every name under the sun, but if you say bad representation, that really strikes a nerve with me. So I wanted to respond, but I wanted to respond in a way that also aligned with my ultimate goals for everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like you're responding in a way that's sort of a teaching response. Help people understand what you're doing.
A little bit of education, little bit of, come on, if we want inclusivity, let's make it fair enough for everybody.
Yeah. You had started to say, we have started to talk about ballet dancers versus sports stars, which is one of my oldest beefs in my life. Love it. And you are definitely one of a growing number of dancers who's stepping outside the world of your company and into other media channels and other opportunities. And we're just always so glad to see this happen because dancers have so much talent that they deserve to have recognized. So we're just curious, as someone who's doing this, do you think that the future does hold greater representation, recognition, and even compensation for dancers? And if it doesn't necessarily hold that, what do we have to do to get there?
Oh, I definitely think it does. I mean, I think you see fashion labels and using all this movement in their ads. And Misty Copeland, she really has kind of set the standard for what's possible as a ballet dancer in breaking through into kind of mainstream things. And so I think that it's possible. It's just, I think that honestly, we as dancers have to have the confidence to put ourselves out there, not just in the studio, but outside of the studio. I try to act on what excites me and what interests me. And photography was something that I would see photographers and I was like, I think it'd be really cool to work with them. And I just would reach out. I would put myself out there and say, hey, would you want to shoot? Like, have you ever thought about working with a dancer? That kind of exposure lent itself really to what I've accomplished so far. And, you know, I'm still a ballet dancer. I still train every single day. I still rehearse, but here I am working with Target. I've worked with Urban Outfitters. I've done things in all these magazines, and I've done that all by just putting myself out there and accepting myself. So I think that if ballet dancers do it, then the sky is the limit for what we can achieve as far as stepping outside of our successes on stage and in the studio.
Yeah. We just saw your paid partnership today with Lyft.
Yeah.
And what is the process like in terms of, I guess, aligning your brand with another brand, and how lucrative is it?
You know, it has been really eye-opening for me, and social media has connected me with people who do social media for a living. Sometimes if I'm contacted by a brand, they'll ask me my rate or my price, and at first I didn't have that. I was like, what, you can get paid for posting this? Like, I didn't get it. And so I met people and people who I trusted, and I could ask their advice. And a lot of times it's taking a certain percentage of your following, and that is what you're paid for a post. A lot of people will do bundled posts where you do two in-feed posts and a story, and that is its own separate rate. Sometimes it's based off of the success of your post, but navigating that it's been very much trial and error. It can be lucrative to do. I mean, and Lyft reached out to me and gave me artistic license to do what I wanted and to make it myself. And Target, when they reached out, you know, I was like, immediately I was going to be like, I'm doing it. Target. But you know, I had to look into what their vice president believes politically. Mm. You know, I had to, what has their organization done with their money? Who do they support? Because nowadays you align yourselves with a company, but you're like, what do they align themselves with? And it takes a lot of diligence, especially being a ballet dancer. Our world is so different than money.
And
companies are... and that world is after making lucrative content. So yeah, it's been very interesting, but the Lyft stuff is very fun. And I guess I try to take on projects where I don't feel like I'm being put into a box, or I'm being used for just one thing. And I also try to not take on things where I feel like I'm filling a quota. Like, I don't want to just be added because I'm Black, and I don't want to just be added to be the gay voice. You know, I need it to feel authentic and genuine. So I don't know if that really answers it, but there's a lot that goes into.
Totally. And that's so great. I feel like, dancers stepping into that world are well positioned to think about the social aspects. And maybe part of that is that they're not used to expecting millions of dollars. I never thought of it that way. I mean, obviously, I'm just approaching it as a value system of anything a dancer can do to do more and get out there is like great. But I just love that you're actually considering who you're working for and what their values are. I don't think people do that. And I think that's amazing. I love that.
You have to, because then it turns into your career, and what you've worked for can go away like that. And that's just out of your control based off of someone who's just higher power. You know, it really is in the social media world. I feel like it really is. You could become guilty by association with commenters and followers. It's called cancel culture, but cancel culture is alive and well, where if you make one mistake, you could be canceled very, very quickly. And that is very scary. I mean, I see it a lot in the news and in pop culture, where one allegation or one bad incident, you're forever tainted. And so I would much rather be very, very careful than have everything that I've worked for be kind of obliterated without my control.
That's so interesting. I've never heard anyone say cancel culture before, but I'm very interested, and this is a little bit of an aside, so I'll move on quickly, but very interested in reading similar articles about how today's economic system has led to more competition, and that competition has led to this overarching sort of treatment where we treat each other in the sense that, oh, if you have something to provide me, great. But if you mess up or you're not perfect, I'm going to write you off immediately and yeah. you're done. And mm. it is very true. This is sort of an aspect of our society. And it, I believe, is leading to, you know, larger rates of anxiety and depression and just this overarching sense of competition. And you see it really in some institutional cultures where people do have that facade and, you know, they're not supporting each other, but almost like looking for each other to mess up or something. Total yeah. aside, but I really identify with cancel culture.
it's been really interesting learning about it. And but that is it really is a real thing.
Well, it sounds like you're walking a line between the power, like accessing the power of being genuinely yourself and being that kind of role model for people, while being very careful to evaluate your own value system and not tie yourself to people who don't represent that. So I imagine that can get tricky sometimes. You don't want to hold yourself back too much. But it seems like go ahead.
Well, I hope I'm not coming across saying that, like, I'm like, don't express yourself.
Because no, you're not. Not at all.
No, but it is walking a very careful line of being passionate and being really determined and representing what you want to represent.
Yeah.
But also making sure that you are not offending people. I've also made it a point to never really, I don't think I have really talked about politics besides like saying, I hope my dad wins an election, you know?
Fair.
It's interesting to navigate, but I think that what more so is, and what being a dancer has really helped with, is that I'm very aware of my surroundings and what's going on. And as a dancer, you know, I think that when you're in that space, you're not only having to think about yourself, you think about your partner and what other people are doing. And that kind of mentality of being able to scope everything that's going on has really lent itself to the success of my social media and what I see in other dancers who are kind of having the same sort of following.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was going to say, it sounds like you're making that decision about partnership sort of upstream enough so that you don't wind up in too great a conflict, because you're saying, well, if there's a brand that I know is doing something I don't support, I'm not going to work with them. And that's what I was going to say, I really love. I think that's such a smart way to approach things.
Yeah, good.
So you don't get... And also, back to what you were originally saying, it sounds like your approach to getting involved in things outside of the typical world of ballet was both self-made, in that you... It sounds like edited and created your own YouTube series, and just the sort of old fashioned, like getting brave and networking and talking to people and telling them you're interested in collaborating, which I love, because not everybody will have the verve or the desire to, I guess, get on social media and have a web series or something like that. But if dancers want to do something outside of the box, then they can definitely think about approaching people and saying, hey, I'm interested. And I just love that you did both of those things and had that dual approach.
Yeah, I mean, I've always had the mentality of like, and it is kind of the truth of the matter from what I've just learned in going to LA a lot. No one is really after what has already been done. If you have a unique point of view, or if you are just kind of fully pushing what you are in collaborating with someone else, it will ultimately be unique. It's of course amazing to be inspired by people and to try and replicate certain things or certain aspects of something, but I've just always had this kind of thing of no one wants to have the same thing, so take the risk and put something out there that is different, or that you're completely happy with, and it seems to have worked a little bit.
Yeah. And so you also have a publicist, which many dancers do not have.
Yes.
And how does your publicist also assist you with partnerships and getting your name out there and collaborating?
Well, I did not train for exposure. I didn't go to school to learn how to get visibility, and I didn't really know how to share my story in with outlets that are unrelated to dance. You know, I feel like I had my little echo chamber of what I created But Gina, my publicist, she has all these fabulous sources and resources and skills that lend itself to sharing my message to an audience that never would have really experienced dance. She has been a liaison professionally, helping me network and to build my empire and my vision, what I see for myself. And I never thought that I really would be in this position where I had a little bit of a team helping me, but I'm forever grateful for her assistance. And protecting your asset is really important, especially when you're dealing with money and your image. So I'm really grateful for Gina to have in my back pocket. She got me the cover of Dance Spirit magazine, and she is the one who got me Elle magazine and Mary Claire, and she's given me opportunities to tell my story on podcasts. But I think that the more visibility, the better, especially for ballet dancers. And so any opportunity I will take to share my story in hopes of kind of creating a more colorful picture of ballet.
And what have been some positive comments and views and from people who perhaps are not in the dance world, who now see dance and ballet in a different light, or perhaps were introduced to ballet through your videos and personality and everything?
I've gotten a lot of messages, and I'm so appreciative of those messages and of kind of inspiration. And you've helped me get into a dance again, and I tried a dance class, and I love getting those messages, but it really hits home to me when I see it in person. And there have been some students here at Houston Ballet who, one of them, I mean, he's a young African-American boy, and he was struggling by being bullied at school and for taking dance, and he loved watching my YouTube series because he felt at home and he felt like it was his safe space. And, you know, if I can create a chosen family for people where they feel like they are wanted and they belong, then I feel like I'm really doing something. And so that was really inspiring. Another young student here transitioned and is really still going through that process. And she is just a big fan, and to have that relationship with her and to help her through classes and to talk to her on the side, it's really, really special. So those are the moments where I can really see it, where it's like I can walk down a flight of stairs and look into the studio and to see them thriving. Those are the moments that I'm really appreciative for.
Mm-hmm. That's great. In our last 10 or so minutes, we'd love to just ask you about kind of what you love to do in ballet and who some of the choreographers are that you're watching.
Yeah.
So let's start with the latter. We've also noticed it seems like you have a passion for collaborating with very bold artists. So we're curious if there are choreographers who you see out there as breaking the mold in particular, and or just favorite people who you're watching.
Okay, well, so William Forsythe will always be one of my faves. Mm. And what I think is so great about him is that he really pushed the boundaries with his original ballets. Like in the middle, it's like a classic. Like everyone will always do that. And that, I think, speaks volumes. It's not like a one-hit wonder. Like it's always done. Mm-hmm. But also when we just did a ballet by him called Artifact Suite, and the girls were doing the ballet or starting to do it. And he was like, do you guys want to put a hip bop in there? Mm-hmm. Do you just put that in there? And they were like, what? You know, and he was like, let's do that. It feels right. And so he also has this ability to change and to be willing to change his work and to make it unique and to make it special for each company. And so I respect someone who doesn't just have to make it the same all the time. He's willing to adapt his work for certain people. So I love William Forsythe. That was a great moment to work with him. Recently, we just finished our first week with Justin Peck. He is here creating a world premiere on our company. Our director, Stanton, he's a choreographer, and we do a lot of new world premieres by him. But Justin, it was challenging at first because he's New York. He's very direct, and he knows what he wants. And his movement he had the luxury, I think, of working on the New York City ballet dancers, that it's a completely different vocabulary than us. And so being pushed to try new things and get out of my comfort zone, that has been really exciting. And I feel like he's a bit of a visionary and not replicating, but creating his own voice of movement. I love his work. But then there's also choreographers that I've never danced before that I'm still itching to dance. Ulysses Dove, Red mm-hmm. Angel, my favorite dancer, Albert Evans, danced the role that I want to do. And he was a big inspiration to me growing up. So I love those choreographers, I think.
Awesome. That's great. So what is the Houston Ballet season like so far? And tell us a little bit about, you were mentioning earlier, the damage that happened to the theater.
Yeah. So our season is still jam-packed with lots of exciting ballets. We're just going to be performing them in a different format than normal. Actually, yesterday was the anniversary of Hurricane Harvey hitting. And it flooded our theater, and it is reopening very soon. But that has forced us to kind of reshift how we do our season. And so we will open our official season in the Wortham at in November with Nutcracker. We'll do 44 shows of the Nutcracker this year.
Whoa.
In February, we will start with the world premiere of Stanton Welch's Sylvia, which is a new ballet based off of the Greek mythology and all that. And we've actually started rehearsals for that. We are participating in, I think every company is doing, honoring Jerome Robbins. It's his centennial. And we'll be doing Fancy Free, which we just finished this week. We learned The Cage last week, and we have yet to start the concert. Azure Barton is doing a ballet on us called Come In, and it's for 12 men. And what's so interesting is that it's very lyrical and very nuanced, which is not typical for Houston Ballet to do. We're normally the punchy, kind of in-your-face men's dancing, so this is a real test and a real, but also like a real breath of fresh air for us. We have the world premiere of Justin Peck, like I said. We'll be doing an older ballet called Dreamtime by Yuri Killian, the full-length Marie, Coppelia, and some local performances here and there at outdoor theaters. And actually in October, we're going to Dubai. So I'm like very excited about that because I really want to ride a camel.
Totally.
Yeah, it's a jam-packed season, but it all will start in February for us, really.
And that's so different because normally a company will learn something pretty quickly, then perform it, then move on to the next, but also learn things earlier in the season. What is that like this time around, just learning everything all at once to be performed later?
Yeah, you know, sometimes I feel like, and maybe it's just me, but when we would learn a ballet and then just drop it, you kind of sometimes over rehearse. Like, it's like, you're like, I got it now. And then it's like when you're on stage, you're like, uh-oh. And you start second guessing things because it's like so in your body. Whereas this is it. I mean, I have 6 hour days and I could do six ballets a day, just jumping from like rehearsal to rehearsal and what we're rehearsing. And so to wrap your brain around what you're doing can be really fast. But, I mean, it literally keeps us on our toes. And it keeps it fresh. But it's a challenge that I think will ultimately help our company in having to just move fast and to be always present and to be hyper-focused and to be able to adapt. And so I'm very interested to see how the second kind of half of our season, because we've never done like one weekend is this ballet and the next weekend is this ballet and then back to that ballet. We've never done that before, so it should be interesting, but I'm really excited about it.
Great. Well, dancers are definitely superhuman if we ever needed the reminder, so there we have it. But we are at time. Anything else you want to promote or want people to know before we sign off?
No, I'm so excited about everything we talked about, and I thank you guys for having a podcast that highlights dancers and talks about our world in depth. I think it's really important, and thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much. This was great.